understand that, you know, this is somebody who is like an uncle to me. He's somebody who helped me find Christ.
Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country that is controlled by rich white people.
Michelle and I told Reverend Otis Moss that we were withdrawing as members of Trinity. United Church of Christ, my home church.
I believe there's an almighty God who speaks to different faiths.
And I believe we worship the same God.
Islam is peace.
I am awed and honored and humbled to have been elected by my sister and brother bishops in the Episcopal Church.
They're back.
Well, welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. As I was saying before we were so rudely interrupted, actually, I don't remember what I was saying. A lot of people to thank. I must honestly say I did not think that this day would come, but it has.
Right. Well, that was 10 years ago, some of the sounds of 10 years ago, 2008. It was this day in 2008 on June 30th, as promised, and with a very little downtime after being canceled by the previous administration of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Issues Etc.'s listeners brought Issues Etc. back on the air. And we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of that return on this Saturday morning. Jeff Schwarz, executive producer of Issues Etc., and myself, Todd Wilkin, I'm your host, have been, well, now for almost 20 years of Issues Etc., but 10 years as an independent radio program and podcast, thanks to our listeners. Jeff, how do you remember that day coming back on the air on June 30th, 2008? I have a recollection, but what was your big recollection?
Two words, extremely frantic.
Why is that?
Because technical aspects were taking place right up to the very start of the open theme, and we had thousands of people around the world waiting for our return, and if they could only see what was happening right before your mic went live.
We had signed an airtime contract with a local affiliate, KSIV, in St. Louis, and so we were obligated to have a live radio program ready to go at 3:03, or I think it was 3:05 at the time, in St. Louis. And of course that coincided with the return of the program. We were also being carried by Pirate Christian Radio and Chris Roseborough, and he'll come into the story here in just a few minutes, but we had no choice. We could not put off that premiere because we'd signed a contract with KSIV and they were ready to go, and we were barely ready to go. I distinctly remember sitting down, putting on my headphones for the very first broadcast coming back and realizing that the headphones didn't work. And I thought, well, they're just not turned up yet. And we were testing before the broadcast. We realized that there was no headphone jack in the studio with me. There was nothing to plug into. And so the fellow who had, there were two fellows who built the studio for us, and they were still in the process of building the studio on that. Was it a Monday, Jeff? What day was it?
I have no idea.
It must have been a Monday or something. Yeah. And they were still kind of in the process of finishing things up. There was junk all over the place, wires all over the place. I barely had a microphone stand. And so one of the fellows that had helped build the studio, and I'm not joking, up till the time that I was saying those words that you just heard in that open from June 30th, 2008, he was standing there next to me in the studio soldering together a headphone jack with shaking hands. I don't think he actually realized that we were going on the air. I mean, he knew we were going on the air, but I think he thought we could just kind of like, oh, we'll give you another 10 minutes. But we didn't have another 10 minutes. And so literally moments before we came on the air, that headphone jack, if I recall, was working in one ear so that I could start the show on that day.
Yeah, I don't think our engineer realized the magnitude and the severity of the project. I think he looked at this little dinky office/studio in Collinsville and thought, yeah, there's probably like 10 people waiting to listen on the internet. But he pulled it off. I didn't think he was going to be able to, but he did pull it off, and we're very grateful for that. You know, this equipment was all possible thanks to our listeners.
Absolutely. Let's go back and tell the story of, briefly if we can, the story of the cancellation and then the weeks that followed. Really, it was only 3 months that we were actually down, and a very short amount of time that there was any question as to whether we were going to come back. But what do you remember about the cancellation? That, if I recall, a very rainy Tuesday of Holy Week 2008.
Well, we really need to do justice to the cancellation. It deserves its own show, don't you think?
Yes, probably does.
I mean, so someday, maybe the anniversary next year, our 11th anniversary of our cancellation during Holy Week of 2008, we should do in an encore podcast like we're doing today about our return. But it was an interesting day. We were called to the international headquarters of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We got a memo that we were required for a meeting there. We kind of had inklings that something could happen. I don't know if I thought we were going to be fired until we walked in the room and the director of personnel for the LCMS was sitting at a table.
If I recall, we had four scenarios that we'd worked out over the weekend, because this is a Tuesday meeting. They wouldn't tell us why we were going in for the meeting, which immediately raised some red flags. And Jeff and I were talking over the weekend, okay, what are the four scenarios? Only one of those scenarios involved us actually getting fired. And we didn't think we would just be kind of abruptly canceled. We thought if they were going to fire us, they were just going to say, guys, you've got a month, wrap it up, finish it up with your listeners, because the show's done. That's what we thought would happen, but not really what happened.
So we were giving our walking papers, so to speak, and out we went and started talking to people closest to us.
So if I recall, we went to a Denny's and we sat down and we started immediately planning what we could do about this. We had no idea. We're both kind of reeling. We just lost our jobs and both had families at home. Both of us immediately called our pastors. I called Michael Cum. You called at the time. It was Pastor Will Wheaton, who is your pastor. And even in the fledgling social media and internet, the word spread very quickly. I think they shut down the switchboard at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It was a very busy time for that poor receptionist there trying to take calls, people asking what had happened. It hit a second wave later that afternoon when our show was not on its affiliate in St. Louis at the time, or I should say it's what had been its radio station at the time, KFUO. The show just wasn't there. And people in the local area then kind of got worked up about it. What happened? Let's see. There was a petition that one of our, at the time, I think it was Jennifer, her name at the time was Jennifer Belaska, am I correct? She started an online petition that eventually got almost 8,000 signatures asking to bring it back. There was a protest that was held, a peaceful protest, I should say, that was held at the International Center of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod by some very loyal listeners, supporters, and guests of the program. And we knew that the prospect of it actually being brought back by KFUO and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod was not realistic. We were not really, at that point, interested in working for either of those organizations again. So we started contacting some people who had been supporters before and who we thought might be supporters in the future, people who had been very generous with us in the past. And within like less than 2 weeks, we had visited several very generous supporters and had already secured enough to build a studio and enough to ensure ourselves that we could bring this thing back and keep it going at least for a while.
Yes, we had our goal was to have pledge commitments of the first year budget in the bank. And thanks to a few faithful listeners and supporters, we were able to come back, 3.5 months after our cancellation.
One of the things we did do is we sat down with, at the time, Chris Roseborough was a guest on the program and was a businessman out in Southern California. And we sat down with him because we needed a business plan. I remember going to a meeting someplace out in West County with him. And this is the first time I'd ever met Chris. We talked many times on the air. He had been a guest for years. And we were just needing his business expertise to help us develop a business plan for the comeback, because this wasn't just bringing back a little show that we did as a hobby. This was going to be our jobs. This is going to be our sole means of support for our families. This is going to be a business, which it has very much proved to be beyond our abilities to run most of the time. But Chris helped us out a lot there. I remember bouncing around. You remember bouncing around ideas about a name for the show with Chris in that meeting?
The irony is one of the names was Fighting for the Faith, which ended up being Chris's show.
Right. And I think Chris at the time said, you know, if these guys come back, maybe I should do something too. And I think an idea that had been rolling around, I don't want to speak for him, but the idea that had been rolling around in his head for a long time to get ahead of the technology and start basically a clearinghouse podcast internet radio station that eventually became Pirate Christian Radio, that launched on the same day with our program, actually. It launched at that very time. He thought, this is what I want to do. And so we should also acknowledge that this is the 10th anniversary of Chris's internet radio station, Pirate Christian Radio, and also his program that has lasted 10 years too, Fighting for the Faith.
So we have secured the funding. We have a business plan. What do we do next? I guess we started ordering equipment. We for a place for a studio.
Yeah, we started looking around for a property to build a studio in, and happened to find one that was almost custom made for it, because it had a window cut in one of the walls, and it had just enough space for us to do what we needed to do. We were stupid enough to believe that we could do this. That's the crazy thing, Jeff. I mean, it's not rocket science. We weren't putting a man on the moon. But we were just ignorant enough about what this would entail eventually that we thought we could do it. I think that's how a lot of small businesses and ventures like this get started.
And once again, our relationships for the past 25 plus years of producing the program came through, because if you recall, we are here today thanks to Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod Congressman John Shimkus, who connected us with our landlord, Osborne Properties here in Collinsville, who has been extremely gracious to us for the last 10 years.
I should mention that Jeff is sitting in that studio on this Saturday morning. I am actually sitting on the floor of my grandson's nursery at my house in Waterloo, Illinois, and we're using equipment that at the time barely existed in order to have this conversation. And we have subsequently, again, through the absolute amazing generosity of listeners, been able to expand that studio and office space into the next office over, because we were running out of room and kind of trashing the place after about 5 years.
Well, and this podcast is really, again, just a way for us to say thanks to our listeners. As you mentioned, we were able to expand into the office adjacent to our studio, thanks to the support of our listeners. And the equipment that you're using from home is also thanks to the generosity of our listeners.
Yeah, people don't realize this. It's not like we have there's a myth that we have some sort of big secret money bags someplace. You're kind of Daddy Warbucks who's out there funding this program on a year-to-year basis. It does not happen this way. It happens through the generosity, big and well, I will never say small, but big and bigger, of many, many, many listeners who've supported us. It's not like we have some war chest out there of somebody who keeps us running. It is the people who actually listen to the program. Now, I remember the first conversation on that premier broadcast as we came back.
I was just going to ask you, do you remember the lineup?
Well, I don't remember the lineup. I remember that the first guest was Dr. Carl Fikencher.
Well, no, that's not true. I'm looking
at it. It isn't?
No. So what we did was...
Man, it's crazy. I would have sworn it was Carl Fikencher.
Well, he was on. Who was it? He was the third guest that day. Well, really second guest. So the first hour, you and I, we called it Todd and Jeff's Spring Break. And we responded to email. And then the second hour was John Green of Pew Forum talking about religious voters in the 2008 presidential election. And then we went to talk with Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the gospel.
Wow. I would have sworn that Carl was the first one. My memory is so firmly fixed that I went to the first guest and it was Carl, but you're absolutely right. And now I remember the John Green. We need to get him back on.
Yeah, where's he been? He's fallen.
He's still working. He's still doing what he's doing, I think.
We just got to get a better producer. I mean, I'm looking at that like he hasn't been on probably the last, that was probably the last time we've had him on.
And then from that point on, it was just back to business as usual. We had very wisely decided to cut the program from 3 hours, which it had been in the LCMS KFUO days, back to 2 hours. It made the show much better, much tighter, a lot less inane banter like you're hearing right now. And I've never regretted that decision. That's just made the show so much better to actually pare it back to 2 hours. And from that point on, it was just, we went back to doing what we'd done before. We did it in a different place. We did it, you know, different names on our paychecks. We did it with different people around us for the most part. But we just went back to doing issues, et cetera, as we always had.
It was a little more difficult. We didn't have any kind of automation software that played bump music and liners and commercials. And if you remember, we used to have everything lined up in order on a CD and play track
we had,
to track.
That was a big... It was a production nightmare because instead of an automation program that would run our breaks and that could just be, you could just drop files in and run the breaks, we did it manually as you could in those days. We had the spots, we had the breaks and the bump music, but it all had to be run off of a CD machine, a really nice CD machine, which I think we still have and is still somehow functioning after 10 years. Of use, but it all had to be pre-prepared before the show in order to do that. And it was, I mean, that didn't last that long until we said, we have to find ourselves some kind of automation program. You can't do live radio without a certain degree of automation. You can't just do it like in the old days when I used to work on the other side of the board in radio in my seminary days. You actually had, they looked like 8-track tapes, but they were called carts. And you plugged those in to a cart machine and played those for spots and breaks and all that kind of stuff. And that was almost what we were doing when we first started out. It wasn't a cart machine. It was a CD machine, but it was labor intensive, to say the least.
You mentioned earlier our meeting in West County, St. Louis with Chris Roseborough to put together a business plan. And we were talking about possible, you know, new names of the show because we had assumed that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod had a copyright on issues, etc. And if you recall, my wife, Beth, who was having health difficulties at the time, and thanks to everyone for their prayers, she's much better. We were at the Mayo Clinic because you and I were like, no name that we've come up with is really as good as issues, etc.
Yeah, we went around and around about various names. And some of them were stupid, and some of them were very good, but we kept coming back to what is the show. The show isn't going to change. That was our whole plan. We're coming back, and we're coming back as, if not under the name Issues, Etc., it's going to be Issues, Etc. What it was that the listeners always loved and supported before was just going to pick up right where it left off. But we thought that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod certainly had a live copyright on the name Issues, Etc. How did you discover that it didn't?
So we're at Mayo Clinic, I believe in Minnesota. I went on the copy, you know, the patent office for the United States, whatever that's called, typed in Issues, Etc., and it had expired. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod allowed the copyright on the trademark Issues, Etc. to expire in 1998. And I called you immediately.
I remember getting this call from you. I spent a lot of time in my basement during those 3.5 months after the show was canceled, waiting to come back, because that's where at the time my enormous PC was, just online. I spent a lot of time on the telephone, spent a lot of time talking to Jeff, and he called me and said, check to see if this is right. I'm looking online, and I can't believe what I'm seeing, but it looks to me like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod let the copyright on the name Issues, Etc. lapse in 1998 when Don Matzit finally left the show for good. He was the previous host of the program and never renewed it. So I looked at it. I'm no copyright lawyer. I just looked at the status of it and I said, I think you're right. Did you call Harry Madsen at the time to have him verify that, or to, how did that work out?
Harry Madsen, a long time faithful, and I mean very faithful listener and supporter, along with his lovely bride, Millie Madsen. I contacted him, and he swooped in right away, got the paperwork in to try to register for the trademark issues, etc.
And if I recall correctly, once that was done, there began a, I'm not going to call it a battle, but I will call it a not as friendly as could have been correspondence between us and the various lawyers who were working for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod over the issue of the copyright. We even had a meeting, if I'm not mistaken, with several members of the LCMS board of directors to discuss the issue. And I think this was even before the comeback. We said, look, we're going to come back as issues, etc., because we now have secured the copyright on this thing. And, you know, the best thing that the Missouri Synod could do is just let it go. They didn't really let it go, did they?
No, we were on the air and we had to plead with our listeners. Now we're back on the air. Now it becomes harder for them to continue their PR campaign against issues, etc., because we're not sitting in our basements anymore. We're actually on the air producing radio and podcasts. So now we're pleading with our listeners. Well, a little historical background. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at the time wanted a gag clause for Todd and myself to sign in order to get our severance packages from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We refused to sign those severance packages because of the gag order. Well, in the trademark dispute, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod attorneys at the time entered virtually word by word the same language of the gag clause that was in our severance packages.
Yeah, they said, hey, you can have the trademark, just sign this thing, which was the gag order that we had refused to sign when we were terminated for our severances. And how that all worked out is a whole other story as well, but it, I think it eventually ended with a letter, an unfortunate letter from one of Synod's lawyers threatening to sue us personally if we didn't relent on this copyright thing. But the fact of the matter was the copyright belonged to Lutheran Public Radio at the time. Even though the Missouri Synod had been using it under the auspices of issues, etc., it had not renewed that claim. So the copyright was ours. They did a lot of shim-sham about how, well, we just want to have the copyright so we can turn around and give it back to you guys, which seemed like a lot of fol-de-rol to do with guys who already had the copyright. I can't remember how the whole thing ended. I think eventually brighter minds or cooler heads prevailed, and they just eventually dropped their appeal or their protest with the government. And if I recall, they did it, what is it called, with prejudice, which means they can't revisit the issue. They said, look, we're not going to fight you, and it's yours, and we're not going to try and get it back from you at some future point. Am I right? Is that how it happened?
I believe you are correct. But again, it was thanks to our loyal, faithful listeners who put the pressure on the previous administration of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, not only because of our cancellation, but now also over the trademark dispute between Lutheran Public Radio Incorporated and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And I think it's important, Todd, that we give some context that Molly Hemingway wrote about. Otherwise, people probably don't understand what we're talking about. And we were talking about the previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Yeah, some people might say, hey, you haven't answered the question, why were you canceled? How did that happen? What was it? And the absolute honest truth is, we still don't know. Not for sure. We cannot say for sure. We have speculation, but we still don't know. We do know that the previous administration of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod did not like the show. And a significant portion of the pastorate, perhaps, of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at the time did not like the show. The reasons were their own, but we honestly don't know. And I've never heard anyone explain it to me who is in a position to have known at the time exactly. We were asking, believe me, from the moment they said, you're canceled, I was asking why. And they eventually said, what did they say, Jeff? Financial and programmatic reasons?
First, I think it was business reasons, and then it was programmatic and business reasons. Was the programmatic was added onto it. But Molly Hemingway wrote about it in Wall Street Journal. Thanks to Gina Raveith, he wrote a column also in World Magazine, Chronicles Magazine. Aaron Wolf wrote a column about our cancellation and the events surrounding it. I think we had three stories in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and other publications as well. But you can learn more about our cancellation, Molly's Wall Street Journal column back in 2008 titled Radio Silence. That'll be under the Listen on Demand page for this podcast at issuesetc.org. And you said it best. The previous leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, particularly the president's office, President Gerald Kieschnick, was not a fan of the show. We knew that. I recall a meeting with the general manager of our former employer, KFUO, where the three of us were meeting, the spring before the 2007 triannual Lutheran Church Missouri Synod convention, and he informed us, like, guys, you're not going to survive after this convention. And what became clear was that the board that oversaw KFUO at the time, called the Board for Communication Services, that President Kieschnick was going to have a majority on that board. And if that happened, issues, etc., would cease to exist.
Its days were numbered. That's what we were told in no uncertain terms.
President
Kieschnick, we did at the time even ask, can we let us take it independent? And general manager just put the kibosh on that idea.
So we had an idea that this was coming, but the election in July of 27, amazingly, we were able to stick around for, 9 months later? Till March, Holy Week of 2008. So you know how these things, you start doing the show again and thinking, well, maybe we got put on the back burner, or maybe, you know, the scenario set up wasn't true, but it was true.
So, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about the last 10 years in terms of what has transpired for issues. It's a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have changed, but the show itself has remained essentially, the technology has changed. We've brought on different guests. We've expanded that. Our listenership has expanded far beyond my wildest dreams. I don't know about your wildest dreams, but a lot has changed, but a lot has remained the same. What are your kind of recollections or reflections on the last 10 years since we came back independent?
Well, I think we're always trying to improve the quality and the ways of delivering issues, etc., to listeners around the world. I would say quality would be, well, the technology we're using now. Thanks to a generous donor, we have been able to purchase equipment for Terry Mattingly, regular weekly guest, Chris Roseborough. Concordia Theological Seminary has what we call the LPR studio, Lutheran Public Radio studio there on campus. And Brian Wolfmiller, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. So we were able to send them equipment that makes them sound like they're right here in studio with us, which has definitely increased the audio quality of the podcast, issues, etc. Another thing we've done, particularly in the last couple of years, is we realize that we produce a podcast that's also a radio show, not a radio show that's a podcast. So we do a lot more recorded interviews with guests. In the old days, when we had Phil 3 hours, you just put people on, right? Can you give us a half hour? And, you know, some people, you know, they're nervous, never been on the show before, but we've had a policy since we went back. Nobody goes on the show live until we've tested them out on a recorded basis. Now, there are exceptions to the rules, to the rule. When you got a big name guest, you got to interview them whenever you can interview them. But we take the time to, for lack of a better word, tighten up interviews, ums and uhs and pauses and things like that, because we're not a live radio show that at the end of the day heads and tails the 2 hours of audio and throws it on the internet and you can listen to it. We tighten things up to make it a better listening experience.
Most live radio operates on the principle, it is what it is. Once it's out there, you can't change it. You don't go back and change it. Why would you? You're live radio. But in the age of podcasting, as we have been doing since, how long have we been podcasting?
15 years.
So we were in on the ground floor of podcasting, and what we've realized over all those years of doing that is that podcasting is a different dynamic, but it's also a different listening experience. And in live radio, you just do it, and you don't worry about fixing it later because it was live, it's out there, and it's gone. Podcasting is a whole different thing, and podcasting has become extraordinarily sophisticated in terms of its audio quality and its production value. And we want to stay on top of that. A lot of podcasts that you listen to just sound like two guys speaking to each other in, you know, over Skype in their basements. And that's fine. Sometimes the content of that can be amazing, but the cutting edge there is some of the highest audio quality you'll ever hear on anything. And we want to stay on top of that. So we want our guests to sound as good as they can, ergo sending out those little mobile studios to the guests that we have on regularly. We want the studio to sound as good as we can. We have fiddled and faddled with our studio in many different ways to make it sound much better. We have, and if you noticed, if you listened to that very first, the open we had on this particular segment, how terrible I sounded. I sounded far away, off mic, faint, and there was hardly any quality to the audio there because we didn't know what buttons to push at the time, what knobs to turn at the time, and how to compress a mic or any of those kinds of things, but we've learned. And so what we try to do is meet the audio standards that of the best podcasts that are out there. And since it is still a live show, that means we can go back and do some post-production that really makes it sound a lot better, that makes it sound like great radio. My standard, I don't think it's any secret, my standard is always, how does National Public Radio sound? And so we've actually researched how National Public Radio gets the sound they get, and we want to approximate and meet that very standard. And it's a big, it doesn't sound like a big thing, but it really is. When you're asking for people's ears, and you're asking them to take time out of their day or to listen to something while they're doing something else, which is what many of our listeners do, you want to deliver the very, very best to them, not only in terms of the content of the show, but in terms of the medium itself too, because we are asking people to take time out of their day. We're asking for people's ears on a regular basis, 10 hours a week. And we're aware of the fact that what they're doing there is a gift to us. And we want to make sure that we're giving them the absolute best quality they can get. That's one of the big things that's changed over the last 10 years. It sounds better overall.
Expert guests, expansive topics, extolling Christ. It's the best way to summarize the program, issues, etc., in the past, present, and in the future. But thanks to our generous listeners, we've added additional programming in the last 10 years beyond the podcast or live stream of issues, etc.
In 2010, was it Christmas? 2010, we launched our 24/7 Sacred Music Station, which is something that Jeff had always wanted to do. He always would say, where is a sacred music station? And not just a Christian music station. There are tons of those. But he's talking about the music of the church, not the pop music of Christian radio, but the music of the church. Where is that? And he said, we need to start that, which is what we did when we started Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, in Christmas of 2010. When did Lutheran Talk Radio, the 24/7 Best of Issues, etc., come around?
We launched that. It's our 24/7 internet talk station on Easter Sunday of 2013. So now we are running Issues, etc., live and a podcast daily, 5 days a week. We then added a 24/7 internet sacred music station in 2010 in Christmas, and then Easter Sunday 24/7 talk station. So now we've got more things, more programming coming out of this little office / studio in Collinsville, Illinois. Getting back to Lutheran Public Radio, if you recall, we're like, is there a market for this? Does anybody want to listen to sacred music? So we launched it. We promised it for what, the 12 days of Christmas?
That was it. That was all we were going to do.
Yeah, in Christmas 2010, the good news was our listenership had far exceeded expectations. The bad news was, because of taking up so much airtime or bandwidth, we were given extremely high overage charges. So we knew the listenership was there, So we came back in Easter of 2011 with a 24/7 permanent Lutheran Public Radio after doing some financial things and realizing there was a market for this. We launched a 24/7 music station permanently on Easter of 2010. Then in Easter Sunday of 2013, we had our best of issues, etc., streaming live from 3 to 5 Central Monday through Friday, and best of issues, etc., 24/7.
And then I think it was 2015 when we got permission and kind of entered into a partnership with Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to carry what we call Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. It's their daily chapel service from the historic Kramer Chapel there on the campus of the seminary in Fort Wayne. And that's something we'd wanted to do for a long time as well. And our listeners loved that. They absolutely loved being able to tune in. It runs on, does it run on LTR or LPR?
It runs on our Lutheran Talk Radio, issuesetc.org, or on the Talk feature of the LPR mobile app.
Yeah, so we bring our listeners a chapel service every morning. The time bounces around due to their chapel schedule, but it's always a chapel service from the seminary community there in Fort Wayne. The listeners absolutely love that feature as well. That's been in the works now for about 3 years. And you just mentioned the mobile app, which is something we hadn't even imagined. I don't even think we were thinking in those terms in 2008, because if I recall, apps didn't exist the way they do now. They might have. But if I recall, all that stuff was so much in its infancy. Smartphones and everything else was so much in its infancy that we couldn't even imagine that. That wasn't even something that was on the radar. But eventually we thought, why don't we have an app for people's mobile devices so they could listen to both Lutheran talk radio and sacred music off the same app?
Yeah, that's been a huge, we've talked about this lots very often around here. When we first came back, most of our people listened to the podcast via iTunes. Now it's the mobile app. They're listening on their cell phone devices. So we had, like you said, we had a 24/7 music, 24/7 talk station. Well, we made it, thanks again, this all costs money, thanks to our generous and faithful listeners, we were able to come up with a high-quality professional mobile app that stream both our music and talk stations. And to be honest, we stole the idea from Ancient Faith Radio, a production company of the, I believe it's the Antiochian Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox denomination. They probably won't like that word, denomination. But we came up with an app that looked very similar to theirs. As a matter of fact, went to the same developer that developed their app.
Yeah, we just said, do for us what you did for them, and they were happy to oblige.
So now, wherever you go with your cell phone, you can listen to Lutheran talk or Lutheran music any day, anywhere, anytime, all in that cell phone device, as long as you have an internet connection. So,
and we actually pay attention to how listeners listen, and we can track that as well. And we have noticed that the means of listening has radically changed in the last 10 years. It's moved from Macs and PCs to mobile devices, which means more people are listening on demand. The thing we have always kept in our mind is that the vast, vast majority of our listeners are on-demand listeners. Or if they're listening live, they're going to be listening live while they're doing something else. So they're going to be moving around. They're going to be working out. They're going to be mowing the grass. They're going to be cleaning the kitchen. And they do it both on demand, and if they're live listening, they're doing it on a mobile device. They're not just sitting down and listening to a radio. That doesn't happen very much anymore. And they're not sitting down and listening from a PC. Some people still do, but that doesn't happen as much for most of our listeners.
By the way, we should have mentioned, we were talking about how improving the audio quality and editing out pauses, ums and uhs. Well, our production director, Craig Feichninger, has Molly's fifth birthday party today. So he was unable to join us this Saturday morning, June the 30th, to edit our mistakes. I'll do the best that I can, but it will be nothing like it usually sounds during the weekday podcast. So there's a disclaimer for you.
So before we talk about the future, I just want to throw out some numbers, Jeff, because this is a way of saying thank you to our listeners, because this is totally the result of our listeners listening and support. We had more than 4.5 million downloads during 2017 alone. I believe we're on track to at least match that for 2018. We have listeners in more than 110 countries. We've actually counted. Our app that we just mentioned, more than 24,000 subscribers to that and growing steadily. You talk about the listening hours. What do those mean when you talk about listening hours?
So how many hours are people listening to our sacred music station a day? This is people around the world, or our sacred talk station. So we have average every day 1,200 hours of listening per day to Lutheran Public Radio, and more than 1,300 hours of listening per day to Lutheran Public Radio, and more than 750 hours listening per day to Lutheran Talk Radio, our 24/7 internet talk station.
It was, I remember I was shopping in the grocery store in March of 2016 when I got a text or a message or something, maybe a phone call, old-fashioned phone call from Jeff, and he was alerting me to an iTunes chart, and somehow we had ranked number one in religious podcasts on iTunes. And it was, that was over Easter, wasn't it? We were actually off work. And then later that night, I was poking around and I realized that somehow we had peaked to number one of secular podcasts too. We had that moment in March of 2016 where we were number one of religious and secular podcasts with the iTunes charts.
Another great aspect of technology, things like Google Home or Amazon Alexa. These are devices you hook up to your internet, the home, and you simply give a keyword like Alexa, play Lutheran Public Radio, or Alexa, play Lutheran Talk Radio, and you can immediately listen to either one of those stations on your Amazon Alexa or Google Home. And we were honored this spring of 2018. We were ranked the 18th Christian pop culture blog in Alexa's global traffic rankings. So that's all over the world. Think of all the Christian culture websites available, and we were honored to be ranked number 18.
And look, this might sound like a little bit of boasting, but we're really boasting in here are our listeners. This doesn't happen. None of this happens. None of what we talked about, the return to the air, the changes over the last 10 years, the expansion of the programming, the new means of bringing the programming to our listeners, the rankings and the ratings and all of those things. None of that happens if the listeners aren't listening. It's all the result of our listeners' overwhelming support and their generosity. That's the only way it happens. We can't make those things happen. All we do is just schedule guests and talk into a microphone. Now, you might be asking, what is the future? I mean, 10 years is great, and we're very thankful to God and to our listeners for the last 10 years, but this is a career for us. We have plans for the future. Some of them are just dreams. Some of them we haven't thought of yet, but we do want to continue to expand the programming of both Lutheran Public Radio and Issues, etc. So, Jeff, you're the guy who brainstorms, whiteboards, and kind of dreams the dreams for the future of Issues, etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. We definitely want to expand our programming at some time in the future, don't we?
Absolutely. We're always looking for new programming ideas. You know, we talked about our sacred music station, which is different, obviously, from Issues, etc. We talked about Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel, which adds a daily devotional liturgical piece to Lutheran Public Radio programming. We talked about having Lutheran music and Lutheran talk on a cell phone device. And again, this is all thanks to our generous listeners. So we're always looking for new programming ideas. We've got some that we're considering seriously right now, and we'll see what comes to fruition. But you know, Todd, it's like most of the good ideas have come from our listeners as well. And so we're open to hearing, you know, any suggestions that you might have for new programming, not for an Issues, etc. type show, but new programs like we did with the music station and what we did with Morning Chapel, from Kramer Chapel, things like that. So we're definitely open to hearing what our listeners around the world, any suggestions you might have, just send an email to talkback@issuesetc.org.
So I guess the long and the short of this is that I'm sitting here staring at a tangle of wires in my grandson's nursery. I'm sitting here using a technology that when I started in radio didn't exist. I'm sitting here after 10 years, well, 20 years of doing this program and 10 years of doing it independently, thanks to our listeners. And it's pretty awe-inspiring to think about what our listeners have enabled us to do and encourage us to do and continue to support us in doing. And those 10 years is not a long time. My life has kind of been chopped up into 10-year increments. And it's not a long time, but it is. It has been a lot of support, a lot of listening. I counted it up, I think, since we came back, 11,800 plus segments of the show that we have done. We have asked a lot of time and dedication from our listeners, and they have been super generous in giving it, and we just continue to encourage them in their support and continue to try and put out the absolute best theological talk show that we can. We spoke earlier about the name, Issues, Etc., how we couldn't come up with one that was better. And a lot of times people see Issues, Etc., and it just sounds so generic. But it is, it's, I didn't think so when I first started doing this show, but it has proven to be the best all-around description of what Issues, Etc. is. It's a theological talk show that addresses both theological issues and the issues of the day as they pertain to Christians' lives and the Word of God. And it covers the gamut with the best guests, with the best topics, and with the best listeners in radio.
You know, something before we wrap this thing up, we really need to thank all our guests. It's a guest-driven show, and we have the best guests in Christian podcasting, Christian radio, what have you. And we don't pay our guests. They come on. They're committed to what we do. It's easy when you have a great host like Todd Wilkin to get these guests to come back on, and they get the show, so to speak. So thanks to all our guests who make our jobs a lot easier.
Yeah, it would not happen without the listeners, but it would not happen if it was just Wilkin talking into a microphone. That would be extraordinarily boring. I would not have blamed our listeners for abandoning us years ago, but it is the guests. It's because we're able to bring those fantastic guests from all different parts of our experience, from all different parts of all the vocations out there, all different parts of the church, to talk about the topics that really, truly matter to our listeners. So in the end, I mean, I don't know how to put it except thanks for bringing us back 10 years ago, and thanks for the last 10 years, and thanks for listening.
I'd like to say, Todd, on behalf of the entire Schwartz family, because you're literally feeding our families, right? So on behalf of Beth, Justin, Emily, Katie, Jack, Joseph, and myself, the Schwartz family, thank you so much. We deeply appreciate how you have provided for us.
So before we close this out, I do want to remind our listeners that the next 10 years depends on them as well, just like the last 10 years depended on them. We have produced a CD of our listeners' favorite 12 hymns, and it's part of a special celebration of the 10th year anniversary of the comeback of Issues, Etc. So for a special 10-year anniversary gift of $100 or more to Issues, Etc., we will send you that CD of our listeners' 12 favorite hymns. You can find it at our homepage, issuesetc.org. You can also make your check payable to Issues, Etc. Send it to Issues, Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Make sure you write hymn CD in the memo line of your check. This has been our love letter to our listeners, and it won't be the last one, hopefully, that we send out to the people who brought us back 10 years ago and have kept us on the air independent for 10 years and continue to listen every single day. So thanks for bringing Issues, Etc. back, and thanks for the last 10 years. And as I said before, and we'll continue to say, thanks for listening. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.